Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk to a representative of the supplement industry, because the supplements have been in the crosshairs lately. There's been a lot of negative publicity about supplements. There's stories that I'm sure you've seen that suggest that A, supplements are worthless, B, that they're unregulated, that it's a vast free fire zone out there, and we're going to speak to that issue with Steve Mister, who is president and CEO of an organization called CRN. CRN is the Council for Responsible Nutrition. It's an industry group, and he'll tell you all about it. Under his leadership, there have been initiatives in Congress to work with them about a sound framework for regulating supplements, because clearly there needs to be some regulation, but not over-regulation. And also, Steve is going to share with us the results of a very exciting new economic report on healthcare cost savings. Steve's background is that he's been in the field of consumer healthcare products for a long time. He's also an attorney in the Washington or has been an attorney in the Washington, D.C. law firm of Wiley, Ryan, and Fielding in general litigation, government ethics, federal election law practice, and he's also been on Capitol Hill as a media relations assistant for former U.S. Senator Charles Mathias. So without further ado, here's Steve Mister. Steve, welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be with you.
It's my pleasure. So first of all, what is CRN?
Well, CRN stands for the Council for Responsible Nutrition, and we are a national trade association located in Washington, D.C. We represent the manufacturers of both the raw ingredients that go into dietary supplements and functional foods, as well as the finished products.
So is every manufacturer of supplements in the country automatically a member of CRN, or is it just certain ones?
We wish that were the case. Like most trade associations, we're a membership organization, so companies join CRN and then pay dues based on their sales. We represent the majority of products in the industry, but no, not every company is a member of CRN.
Okay, so but you would say that the vast majority of the highly visible companies that make consumer products, chances are they're members of CRN.
That's right.
And what is the mission statement of CRN? What's the purpose?
Well, our purpose is to sustain and enhance a climate where companies that are trying to do the right thing and being responsible about their products can develop and manufacture and then market those products to a consumer that has confidence in the marketplace.
Okay. I mean, I think that that's a really key issue, because confidence in the marketplace has certainly been undermined by a lot of media reports. There seems to be a slant in the media towards slamming supplements, suggesting that supplements are potentially dangerous, adulterated, not properly regulated. You probably have been watching some of these press reports with the same dismay that I have greeted them.
I have, and of course, you know, unfortunately, some small portion of that criticism that we've seen in the media, some of that is justified. But you know, the vast majority of it is either a misunderstanding of the science, or in many cases, it's because of the supplement industry just by its nature. You know, we are one of those industries that the media loves to watch, because it's it creates the possibility of a story that something that you think is good for you might not be as good for you as you think it is. And that, you know, it's like the dog bites man, man
right.
bites dog situation. So we are an easy victim for the media, but it's simply that, you know, we fit into that that storyline.
Do you subscribe to any of the conspiracy theories that the powers that be seeking greater regulation over the supplement industry are floating out press releases and stories to the media that the media readily grabs onto and furthers the agenda of people who say want to empower the Food and Drug Administration with vaster powers of oversight?
You know, I tend not to buy into a lot of the conspiracies. I do think, you know, we have to be certainly conscious that there are people on Capitol Hill who would like to see the industry much more regulated, and so it's to their advantage to see stories that that paint a negative picture of the industry. But I tend not to think that it's a vast conspiracy. It's some well placed individuals.
Well, you know, the key word here is responsible, and I think you know, I've looked at many of your pronouncements and writings and press releases, and you seem to draw the line between the, quote, responsible players and some people who are sort of renegades or fly-by-nights in this industry. I mean, is it possible that they're creating a negative impression for the more mainstream, bigger, responsible players?
You know, unfortunately, as we look at the industry and the marketplace today, it really is a tale of two industries. There is the mainstream industry, which we believe really is the majority of dietary supplements in this country, and those are the companies that really do put their consumers first. They want to build on that relationship. They're in this business for the long-term health of their consumer. But you have to be honest and say there are some companies kind of around the fringes that are in to make a quick buck. They're in claiming that they can cure cancer or treat some disease that they're not supposed to be saying in the first place. And those are the companies that are not out for their consumer. Luckily, they're a very small minority of the industry, but we have to acknowledge that they're out there, and we have to distinguish between responsible players and those that aren't.
I like that, a tale of two industries. You're taking a page from our mayor here in New York, Mayor de Blasio, by suggesting that it's kind of a dual world when it comes to the world of supplements. And some people may like that analogy, and others may not. But depending,
well, you know, I think what it also does is it does recognize for consumers that they have to be savvy about the choices they make too. They need to make sure that they're purchasing from companies that are reputable, that are in it for the long term. When they see claims about weight loss or disease treatment that just sound too good to be true, consumers need to be savvy about that too. And say, does that really sound like something that a dietary supplement should say? And if it doesn't, then maybe I want to stay away from those companies.
Well, that's interesting. It suggests that CRN represents, to some extent, an effort by the industry to self-police, suggest that there are players that meet certain standards, that adopt at least a commitment to quality and safety, and that maybe a membership in CRN confers a little higher level of accountability.
We like to think it does. We publish our membership roster on our website, and we do have a number of voluntary programs that our members follow. In addition to a general code of ethics, for instance, this year we developed a program on caffeine labeling to make sure that consumers would know exactly how much caffeine they are getting in their dietary supplements. We also have programs on upper levels of certain vitamins and minerals to make sure that consumers are not getting too much, and our companies agree to abide by those upper levels. So, you know, we think our membership means something. We have a program with the Better Business Bureau that reviews advertising and issues decisions as to whether ads are truthful and not misleading to consumers. And our members support that process. So we have a number of self-policing initiatives.
Oh, that's great. And clearly, some of the claims lie outside the pale. They're beyond reasonable, such as extraordinary weight loss claims or sexual potency claims. It seems that some arenas like radio advertising are rife with these types of claims, and that's not something that you support.
Absolutely not. And we would like to see the media do a better job of self-policing what they allow to be put in print and put on the air. But in the meantime, industry has a role too to be conservative and to make sure they can support what they say. And then consumers have a role to be savvy in this. And if they hear something that's too good to be true, stay away from it.
Yeah, I just want to, coming from the radio business, what I have seen in my radio career, which has spanned now a quarter century, is a progressive decline in standards for advertising on radio. It seems like if the check clears, they will air the commercial. And there used to be some standards. The standards weren't very stringent, but now, you know, you cannot look to a radio station or even a TV station to police the quality of advertisements that they get. They're in dire straits. They're looking for financial support. So really, there are going to be some advertisements that are not of the highest standards or ethics or quality. So you also work with our friends in Congress to advance the interest of the supplement industry. And some people criticize that. They say, oh, it's a very, very powerful lobby. Something where they wield inordinate influence over legislators. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, our most powerful secret weapon in Congress is actually the consumer. The dietary supplement consumer is a very motivated consumer and very passionate about their ability to have access to these products.
Yes.
And so while yes, you know, we do have lobbyists in the halls of the Capitol every day, and we are building relationships up there. Our strongest voice is the fact that our consumers will speak out to protect that right to have access to supplements, and that's just democracy. You know, at the very heart, that's the most important thing that people have is their ability to have a voice with their members of Congress, and so we're very appreciative of that.
Well, I think there were some supplement controversies recently that reached levels of concern at a congressional level, and I believe CRN sort of supported some initiatives to either ban or restrict certain supplements that were a little bit over the top, certain sports supplements. Is that not correct?
Well, we didn't have to take any position on those issues with Congress, but you know what we have been doing is we have supported reasonable regulation of supplements as long as that regulation is not excessive. So, several years ago, we supported the legislation to require companies to make adverse event reports available to FDA. So that if a consumer calls a company and they've been rushed to the emergency room or they've had a severe medical incident that the consumer somehow believes was connected to the supplement, the company now is required to tell FDA about that. And that wasn't something we chose to do lightly. We discussed it among the membership extensively before we supported that legislation. But we felt like that was a case where consumers ought to be able to know that if they report something to a company because they believe it was connected to the product, that the company is going to tell FDA about it. That's just kind of part of the promise we make to our consumers.
At the very least.
Take that information and put it in a file cabinet somewhere.
Right. The claim is often reiterated, kind of like a mantra in stories where supplements may come up short. And we know that the science sometimes is debatable in some of these studies. That's another subject entirely. But the mantra is that the supplement industry is unregulated, that supplement manufacturers merely mix up a batch of whatever concoction they want, and the government does not have the power to inspect or doesn't have the power to recall items, doesn't have any say in the process to intervene between the manufacturers and the consumers. What's the truth of that?
Well, you know, we see that statement in the media, too, and it could not be farther from the truth. Dietary supplements are absolutely regulated, and you can ask any company that's in the industry right now making products that they're putting out there for consumers, and they will tell you about the regulation, the fact that every facility is required to be registered with the FDA and then renewed every 2 years. The fact that claims that you affect the structure and function of the body, you have to notify FDA that you're making those claims. Each one of those facilities is open and subject to inspection by FDA, and in fact, many of those every year do get inspected by FDA, and then sometimes the results are not even that positive for the industry. You know, if you've been the subject of an inspection and the FDA has come back and said you must make these 10 changes in your manufacturing, you certainly understand firsthand that these products are regulated.
Yes. Indeed, and there is something called GMPs. Is this something that is mandatory, or is this something that many companies have decided to adhere to? I think it's good manufacturing processes?
Yes, GMPs are good manufacturing practices. Those are a whole set of regulations issued by the FDA, and they are mandatory for all finished products in the industry.
Okay.
Those are the standards by which FDA does their inspections. And they are quite comprehensive. They cover everything from the moment a raw material comes into a facility. It requires that those products be tested for identity. It requires that the employees have training in whatever jobs they have in the facility. It monitors the entire process, and then coming out of the other end of the manufacturing, it requires that those finished products also be tested to be sure that what's in the product is identical to what's on the label.
There is a trend underway in Europe, in the EU, the European Union, towards tighter regulation of supplements, and alarmist reports have been coming across the pond for quite some time that have people in the United States kind of upset, saying maybe it can happen here, that tighter regulations will be enacted. The headlines from papers in England declare that as many as 250 popular supplements will be banned, that you won't be able to get vitamin C over 60 or 100 milligrams, trivial doses, and there's an effort to internationalize these standards. Is this something that CRN is looking at?
Well, I think a lot of those reports out of Europe are exaggerated in terms mm-hmm. of what the regulations do, and there's some things that have happened maybe years ago. That news gets recycled again and again as if it were current. But it does concern us when some of the things that we see coming out of Europe with regard to the claims that you can make for products. We saw the EU a couple of years ago implement a whole series of regulations that basically requires that these supplements would have to have randomized clinical trials to back up anything that they say, which is pretty much what you would hold pharmaceuticals to in terms of the level of support. So that would be very expensive for the industry to try to implement. But, you know, one thing that Europe could take a lesson from us is our GMP process. Our good manufacturing practices are actually far in advance of where Europe is. And we think those are good for the industry. They give consumers assurance that products will be made to quality standards.
Well, absolutely. So to accentuate the positive, one of the things that CRN has been involved with is that they commissioned an economic report on healthcare cost savings that accrue from the targeted use of specific supplements. So that's a pretty impressive document. It goes on for page after page after page. And perhaps you can summarize the high points of that for our listeners.
Sure. You know, we are really excited about this whole report because, you know, we've been saying for years that supplements are good for your health. And through this economic study, we've been able to also demonstrate that supplements are good for your wallet. The study looks at 8 different dietary supplement regimens and looks at their ability to lower disease risk. Now, again, that doesn't mean they're going to cure the disease. It means it lowers your likelihood of getting the disease in the way that calcium and vitamin D, for instance, lower your risk of osteoporosis. And what we did was we looked at these 8 regimens and looked at how many people could benefit from getting on these supplement regimens and lowering their relative disease risk. So, for instance, phytosterols, a popular dietary supplement that helps to reduce the risk of coronary heart-related medical events. Using those products can lower your risk of a coronary event by over 11%. And so we know then that if we can lower the disease risk, we can also lower the hospital visits, the emergency room visits, and all of those have dollar figures attached to them. So, for instance, with phytosterols, we could avoid over 2 million events between now and 2020 related to cardiovascular disease through the use of these phytosterols. And we could save $3.3 billion a year. That's billion with a B, $3.3 billion a year from reducing those event rates. And we'd do the same thing, for instance, with omega-3s, which also have an effect on CHD, coronary heart disease. People who use omega-3 dietary supplements reduce their risk by almost 7% of having a medical event. And so over the the 7-year period between now and 2020, we could realize $2.8 billion in savings to the healthcare system from increased use of omega-3s. So those are examples of the kinds of things that we showed in the study. And cumulatively, the takeaway is that dietary supplements do save the healthcare system money. People who are at risk of some of these diseases can really lower their risk related to it, and also, you know, lower the cost that they would suffer as well.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this study hasn't made as much of a splash as studies that are much smaller scale and more limited in scope that suggest or further the agenda that supplements, A, are a waste of time, or B, can even be harmful. And, you know, so clearly I think that the word needs to get out about this. Where can our listeners get more information about that economic impact report?
Sure. Well, you know, they can get the entire study or excerpts from it, summaries of it, on our website, supplementforsmartprevention.org. supplementforsmartprevention.org. And there they can get some really interesting infographics that describe the study. They can get the entire 100-page report if they want to. They can get a 4-page brochure that summarizes some of the findings. But there's some really good, interesting results from this. We looked at, in addition to the omega-3s and the phytosterols, we looked at magnesium, we looked at calcium and vitamin D, both of which are helpful in reducing osteoporosis. We also looked at vitamin B for coronary heart disease and psyllium dietary fiber supplements. And then we looked at lutein zeaxanthin.
For the eyes.
Age-related eye disease.
Yes, that's huge. Yeah.
You know, that's one of the really more amazing pieces, because we found that people who use lutein zeaxanthin dietary supplements can reduce their disease risk for AMD by 23%, which means that we could avoid over 7 million events related to AMD. And, you know, when people lose their sight from AMD, they often lose their independence. They have to go into treatment facilities and things like that. So the ability to reduce those things, those diseases, not only, you know, change people's lives, but it saves the healthcare system billions of dollars a year. We think upwards of about $31 billion over the 8-year period could be saved by increased use of lutein and zeaxanthin.
Well, it sounds like, you know, and I certainly believe that these figures are plausible, and they only represent a relative small fraction of the supplements that are available with various benefits. But you pick the low-hanging fruit, the really big ones where, you know, clearly there's good science and there's strong evidence for positive effects on large numbers of people. But they clearly missed the boat when they drafted Obamacare, because the goal of that legislation is to save healthcare dollars. Right.
And actually, there is a piece of the Affordable Care Act that if it were implemented, could actually help people understand the benefits of dietary supplements, because there is a piece of that law that would incentivize more preventive medicine. And of course, that's what dietary supplement usage is. It's preventive medicine. It's helping people stay healthy in the first place. So the law actually calls for some pilot studies in this area, and we'd sure love to see those pilot studies get done by the government that would demonstrate to the government what we can already show from these private studies, that a small 11 cents a day, 29 cents a day for some of these supplements can reap a huge cost in return.
Well, you know, whether or not there's going to be a government initiative, and, you know, there's the devil is in the details sometimes. The legislation calls for certain things, but then it's a question of writing the correct administrative rules and policies, as you know. It's a matter for the public to take up the banner and, in effect, vote with their feet or vote with their consumer dollars and safeguard their health utilizing some of these findings.
Well, there's lots of interesting public policy potential from our study, and, you know, one of them would be even for private employers. There's so much going on among private employers who are not waiting for the government to act, but are doing their own thing to try to incentivize wellness among their employees, whether it's, you know, smoking cessation programs at work or exercise programs or weight loss. You know, if private employers would take a look at the data that we have and implement programs to encourage supplement use for people who are at risk of certain diseases. So if they looked at their employee base and said, you know, if you have a family history of heart disease and you're at increased risk, let's get you on an omega-3 regimen or a phytosterol regimen or a psyllium fiber regimen to help reduce your risk of coronary events. So, you know, I think even private employers can take away a lot from this. As you say, not wait for the government.
You know, in your private vision of the ideal of what could be, and dream big here, if you don't mind indulging me for a moment, would you like to see something like tax incentives for employers who undertake programs like this, or perhaps HSAs, health savings accounts, which afford individuals, taxpayers, the opportunity to use discretionary HSA money to support them, their health with supplements?
I'd love to see HSAs and FSAs be available for people who want to, you know, who want to be proactive and take care of their health and use supplements as a preventive measure, for them to be able to use that pre-tax money that they put away in their HSAs and FSAs. And in fact, we have legislation that we have supported, and several members of Congress have now introduced, that would allow people to use their HSAs and FSAs for dietary supplements.
Well, that's really exciting. Can we get the word out to our listeners on how to encourage their legislators to get behind something like this? I mean, obviously, in this current gridlock environment, not a lot of stuff is getting done in Congress, but that sounds like an initiative worth supporting.
And you know, and you're right, in this kind of gridlock environment, anything that's related to healthcare is almost almost toxic. Regardless of which side you're on, nothing seems to be moving in that area. But boy, it would sure be helpful for consumers to contact a member of Congress and express that they want to be able to use their HSAs and FSAs to make their supplement purchases, and encourage your legislators to support that legislation.
Yeah, that's a really great vision, I think, for how we can incorporate the benefits of safe and properly regulated and properly scientifically validated supplements to improve the health of Americans. And this could have a great economic impact, because our healthcare system is floundering. The expenditures are going through the roof, and self-care could really give us some bang for our buck.
That's right.
You also have a consumer wellness education campaign called Life Supplemented. Is that different from the Supplements for Smart Prevention initiative?
Oh, sure. The Supplements for Smart Prevention is all about the economic cost savings to consumers and to the system. Life Supplemented is a consumer education program that helps consumers understand how supplements can benefit them. It has looked at how doctors and other healthcare providers use supplements themselves, how they recommend them in their practices. It's really a much broader campaign than just the economics.
Right. So, you know, you keep tabs on the industry, and you look at statistics, and it's kind of like, you know, your annual report probably reflects dollars and cents in terms of and percentages, number of consumers or percentage of individuals in the United States using supplements, and also just the overall aggregate size of the business in terms of billions of dollars of sales of supplements. Have you seen that some of these negative reports have in any way made a dent in the participation by the American public in the use of supplements?
I think that the negative reports are giving people pause, and you know, we don't see supplement rates growing as much as we think they should. When following some of these reports, we only had several of them in December that suggested that supplements may not be as good for you as we thought. We think that the science was wrong there and was misplaced, but nevertheless, we did see a little sputter in sales as a result. So we know consumers listen to those things, and sometimes consumers may not have the ability to read between the lines and understand what really went on in those studies.
You know, I'll tell you that, you know, I am, you know, full disclosure, I sell supplements. I sell them through my website at drhoffman.com, and I, you know, have patients who utilize supplements. And I have to say that I have really not seen a drop-off in demand for supplements. It's almost like people see these alarmist studies and they're too committed to the use of supplements or too sophisticated to be alarmed, because, you know, it's like crying wolf. You know, you do it so many times, and after a while, the media and some of the supplement bashers are losing credibility with the public. You know, maybe I'm just working with more dedicated people than the general public in my practice and via my radio program.
Well, you know, Dr. Hoffman, I think you're right in some respect that people do filter a little bit better than they might have before, because some things they just know intuitively are good for them. And so they may read a study where the researcher says, if you're getting a perfectly healthy diet and getting all of your nutrients from food, why take a supplement? And consumers look at that and they say, okay, yeah, that's a nice goal to strive for. But I know I eat fast food. I know I don't get a balanced diet every day. I know I'm on the run, and sometimes I just grab what I can. So I'm not that 0.5% of Americans that's getting everything I need. And so for the other 99% of us, we say, yeah, we do have nutrient gaps that we need to fill in, and we need to make sure that we're getting all of those levels of vitamins and minerals that the government says are good for us, called the RDAs. And so for the other 99% of us, we do need to supplement. And I take my multivitamin every day.
Right. Well, one of the things that it has been shown to be a misconception, according to a recent study, you may have seen it, is that the people who use supplements are doing so to counteract a bad lifestyle. You know, they don't exercise enough, they may smoke, they may drink too much, they don't eat well, and so they're taking supplements as insurance policy. So the critics of supplement use sometimes say, well, this gives people a false sense of security. But I have to say that it's au contraire. The very same people who take supplements seem to be the people who are most careful about their health. They exercise more, they tend to eat better diets, and they take supplements as part of that healthy lifestyle. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And we have done our own research. We do a consumer survey every year, and so now we have over 12 years of data that we can go back and benchmark. And we've been able to demonstrate with that data that the supplement user is more likely to practice a whole variety of healthy lifestyle behaviors. They're more apt to see their doctor. They're more apt to try to maintain a healthy weight. They're more apt to exercise. They're less apt to smoke. So they're doing all this whole constellation of things that are healthy behaviors. So this notion that they would take a supplement and then sit on the couch and eat bonbons and assume that they can, you know, let everything else go to pot, it certainly doesn't hold up from 12 years of research. But at the same time, you know, then people will use that they'll turn that argument on its end and say, well, those people really don't need supplements then if they're doing all these other healthy things. What the research also demonstrates is that even the people who are using these supplements and, you know, using the vitamins and minerals to fill the gaps, if you took the supplement out of their daily diet, they wouldn't be reaching the RDA and all their vitamins and minerals from the diet alone. So, yes, they're eating a healthier diet than the non-supplement user, but they need that supplement to be sure they're getting to 100% of RDA in all of their nutrients.
And then, of course, you know, beyond the RDA, there's this notion of a therapeutic level of certain supplements. And I know we have to be careful about making disease claims, because the rules of the game mandate that supplement manufacturers can't treat diseases. They can only support health and maintain good nutrition. But there are many studies that suggest that the RDA for some people with certain conditions may be an unrealistically low goal to achieve.
Absolutely. You know, you think about something like vitamin C, for instance. So the Institute of Medicine, who sets our RDAs, says that the recommended daily intake is 90 milligrams a day of vitamin C. That's going to prevent you from getting scurvy. But the upper level for vitamin C, that would be the point at which you might start to see some adverse events, is way up at 2,000 milligrams a day. Now, a lot of us take 500 or 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C because we know about the research that says that vitamin C can help to reduce the length of a cold. There's some research that suggests it may even help you resist a cold. And so we choose to take a lot more than 90 milligrams a day, and that's perfectly safe because we're still well under the upper level. And I think it's important that consumers understand that there are really two numbers that they need to be concerned about. One is the RDA. That's what they, the Institute of Medicine says is the minimum you need to be sufficient in the nutrient. But as long as you stay under the upper level, which sometimes can be magnitudes higher, there's no safety risk either.
You know, one of the problems I have with some of the health reporting lately is that, you know, in the spirit of journalism, say you uncovered a scandal in the, let's say, the Justice Department, and you're about to publish a story, front page story in the New York Times about something that's going on. Generally, you'll make a phone call to the press office at the Department of Justice and say, hey, you know, we're going to run this story, and here's the outlines of the story. Do you have a, you know, a statement to make or a rebuttal? Do you find that CRN, as, you know, one of the prime representatives of the supplement industry, is getting enough of an opportunity to weigh in on some of these supplement stories? Do you get a call from the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Wall Street Journal if they're going to run an article like this? Or do you feel like you're out of the loop sometimes and you're having to do damage control days later?
You know, it's a combination of both. I think we're doing a pretty good job of getting into these stories, and we make a point of trying to get into these stories because we do feel like that there is an industry perspective that needs to be part of the stories. And so good reporters who are looking for fair balance in some of those, you know, larger publications do reach out to us on a regular basis, and we're more than happy to provide a common perspective. We wish a lot more reporters would give us a chance to provide an industry viewpoint because, as you say, sometimes they're just simply misunderstanding a study, or they have misread the research, or they will, you know, tend to go after a headline rather than giving consumers useful information that comes out of these studies.
Well, you know, the framework that we're all working with is something called DSHE, the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act of, I guess it was like 1996, am
94.
I?
94. 94. We're on the 20th anniversary this year of DSHE.
And, you know, some people criticize that. They say it's too weak, the regulation isn't stringent enough. But from another perspective, DSHE, in effect, restrains First Amendment free speech, because let's say there are valuable points to be made about a supplement in relationship to a disease. I'll just give you an example. Vitamin D may help to prevent or even treat. I'm going to use the word treat because it's a disease claim here, you know, and I'm a physician, and this is my personal opinion, so I can opine. You, as a representative of the supplement industry, maybe you got to chill a little bit here, but I'll just say it. I use vitamin D in the treatment of multiple sclerosis at high doses. That is, however, not something you can do on a bottle of vitamin D. You can't say vitamin D, MS, treatment. You can't even go near that. Now, do you feel that this is an unsatisfactory state of affairs, that we're restrained from properly communicating the benefits of supplements in various disease states?
Well, you know, as I said, since this is the 20th anniversary of DSHE, this is a good time, a good year to kind of step back and look at where has DSHE really been successful, where are some things, if we were doing it today, we might do a little different. But that whole calculus as to when you can make a structure function claim as opposed to a claim that treats disease, that's what the industry agreed to 20 years ago. And so, you know, I always remind our member companies that that's the deal we made, and until we feel like we want to go back to Congress and ask them to rewrite the law, that's the deal we have to live with, because we got a lot of things in exchange for that. So we are not held to the same kinds of levels of clinical trials that, say, a pharmaceutical would be required to go through. But in exchange for that, we don't get to make the kind of claims that a pharmaceutical would. So, you know, that's basically the pact that we entered into, and now we have to live by it.
Right. So, you know, clearly this is a compromise. It's not an ideal world. On the one hand, you know, you're fighting people who want much more stringent regulation, clinical trials that might cost millions or tens of millions to complete before a new supplement is introduced. We don't want that. So in exchange, we may have given up some of our prerogatives to shout from the mountaintops the benefits of certain supplements.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, one of the differences, the very nature of our products and our ingredients is that they come from nature. And so they are not chemical molecules that were uniquely created in a lab. And we don't have the kind of intellectual property that pharmaceuticals
right.
have.
Well, that's
so
true.
We don't have the ability to make those kinds of profits back because these are natural products. And so to hold us to those kinds of randomized clinical trials, it would be cost exorbitant, and it would kill the industry because we don't have the ability to make back that kind of profit.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you do a very, very stringent study showing, for example, that
vitamin D,
yeah. Right. Yeah, it's great. You know, somebody expends millions and millions of dollars to demonstrate the benefits of vitamin D, and then, 100 other manufacturers just step up and say, great, now we'll make 5,000 international unit vitamin D. And, so there's no incentive to invest in that level of research.
That's right. And all of that was part of the compromises that were made back in 1994.
Okay. Well, the call to action to our listeners is to go to CRN. How can they access CRN's wealth of information? Let's
sure. Well, you know, we've already talked about the site for the study is Supplement for Smart Prevention.
Now, is it ORG? Wait, is it singular or plural? Supplement.
Okay. It's singular. Supplement for Smart Prevention.
Okay. .org. Great.
Our Life Supplemented website is simply lifesupplemented.org. And then for people who want to go to the CRN website, which has more industry information on it, that would be crnusa.org.
Great. All right. Where do you see this going? You see, supplements, continuing to make an impact in the future of more self-regulation, better quality for the American consumer?
I think overall all the stars are aligned for continued healthy growth for this industry. The good manufacturing practices regulations, now that they are being implemented across the board, improving the quality of the product, which gives consumers more confidence in the manufacturing of these things. The science, despite some of the sputters recently, the science keeps getting better and demonstrating more and more uses and more value for these products. And I think that there is more and more interest in people wanting to take control of their own healthcare. They want to have the ability to make decisions how to stay healthy, and particularly as people start to get concerned about old age, they want to go into old age healthy. And so all of those things are aligning to make a very bright future for the industry.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because you certainly have your finger on the pulse of the supplement industry. Steve Mister, President and CEO of CRN, thanks very much for sharing some of your valuable time with us here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Nice to join you. Thanks.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks again. Until the next time, this is Intelligent Medicine. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal, or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine.
and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.